broadcasting from Hollywood, California. It's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
It's all about the current state of reality TV. From Celebrity Big Brother to Undercover High, from Dorit in BH to Vicky in OC. And we look at what should be done with the Real Housewives of New Jersey. Kate Casey joins the Rants to go deep and talk all things unscripted right here. Let the ranting begin. I am joined by comedian, author, and host, Kate Casey. Hello, Kate.
How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming on Grant's Rants.
I feel like you have a very unique accent.
I've been told it's a cross between Boston and the Bronx.
Okay, I dig that. Yeah, I could hear that.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to lose it when I came out to LA so badly, and then I've embraced it about 5 years ago, and this is it. You know what I mean? This is it. So I want to have a little chat with you about all things reality TV in this episode. Kate Casey, she hosts Reality Life with Kate Casey, a little bit of redundancy right there. But she's hosting this show all about reality TV. So, of course, I love it. So I figured my audience would love it. So why not get into a huge chat about everything from housewives to house guests and a little bit in between. So let's get started. Kate, do you watch Big Brother at all, any of the versions?
I watched Big Brother this year, and then I interviewed a couple. They fell in love on the show.
And oh, Mark and Elena, right?
Yes. Yeah. So followed the show. I remember watching the first season. I just moved to LA, and I remember that season. One of the contestants was this gorgeous girl, and I remember they had some challenge, and she took the challenge. It was like you could go into the booth and talk to your family who you haven't seen in 2 weeks, or you can keep playing and get this like stack of money. And it was something like that. She took the stack of money and didn't talk to her family. And I remember people gave her so much crap about it, but that woman, by the way, now created some skincare product. It's like foundation that works for anyone's skin tone to cover marks. And I think she just sold that company and is like a multi-millionaire.
Well, maybe it was good money to invest in such company. It was a bad choice.
Now you look back and it's like, well, no wonder she didn't like want to talk to her. I can see you after the show is over, but I'm going to take this stack of money and I'm going to invest it in your skincare company. And I'm going to take that company public and you guys can all look like chumps. So
go. Good for her. Someone's making a wise decision. I haven't really enjoyed Big Brother too much this last season, but I've been very intrigued by Celebrity Big Brother. I watched the UK version and I'm like addicted to this current one that's airing. So this one hopefully delivers. It's coming to CBS. We've talked about it on this show. The cast is yet to be revealed. There's a lot of speculation that they're going to reveal it around the Grammys, which air on CBS on January 28th. That's 10 days before the premiere of the show. Are you going to look at it? What do you think?
I am. And I'm going to make some predictions of who I think. If I were to use my degree in psychic predictions, one I don't have, I would say we're going to see Carney Wilson.
I like her.
Gary Busey. Mm-hmm. Gary Busey, Dennis Rodman. Maybe Rob and Amber from Survivor, but they have four daughters now, so maybe just one of them. Who else? I feel like there's certain people that show up in all these shows. Shayna Mokler, maybe?
How do I know her? Where is she from?
She was married to Travis Barker, and they had a reality TV show for a while on TV. Then they got divorced, and now she was just on a show this year called Growing Up Supermodel that she produced and starred in. And it was about a bunch of offspring of famous people who are becoming sort of Instagram models.
Oh,
she was notoriously, she was like a Miss USA a long time ago. And then she had a baby with Oscar De La Hoya. Mm-hmm. And she married Travis Barker. And then she appeared on the Growing Up Supermodel. So the daughter on Growing Up Supermodel was her daughter with Oscar De La Hoya.
That sounds like the caliber of people that we would get on this show. I was curious if they were going to go the ratchet route, if they were trying to go with stars of, you know, D-listers or yesteryear, or if they were trying to go with more of the plug-in tech millennial group of people. So I don't know. I'm curious, but I think you're on the right track. A lot of rumors are surrounding Matt Eisman, Ross Matthews. Black China's been on a lot of people's lists, so I think there's smoke with that one. And the Mooch, Sean Spicer, who I'd rather have a V8 than watch Sean Spicer on a reality show.
And Sean Spicer's not going to do that. There's no way. He's trying to get consulting jobs and communications. He's not going to do that. I don't think Blac Chyna will do it because I don't think it would pay enough money for her. I think she probably makes enough money off of Instagram posts that she wouldn't need to do it. I don't think Ross Matthews would do it because I don't see him living in that communal living style. I think that would drive him bananas. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say maybe they're going to throw in like a couple YouTube stars because a millennial is like, whatever, I'm in college, this is no big deal, communal living. But once you're like an adult and you have your own space and maybe you're married or you have a partner, I don't think you're as willing to live in those accommodations. Oh, I was going to throw another name in the hat, Janice Dickinson. I'm going to say that she's
good one.
I say it is jarring when you look at the pictures of the Celebrity Big Brother studio. And how much nicer it is than the regular Big Brother students. Because when I was interviewing Mark and Elena, they told me that you're only really allowed outside 2 days during the week. Even though they show them working out, there's really almost no time that they give them outside because they move all the production stuff outside. So they're stuck in that house forever. And it was really, it had like puce green, like this disgusting green, purple couches. I would shoot myself.
Never. Yeah. No, I know. I look at it and I see that they have the black painted ceiling tiles, like low ceilings full of lights. Like that, to not see the outside and to have that be the reality, I think I could do it for maybe 2 days. Never mind, like 5 days out of the week for unlimited time.
Horrible. Yeah. I can't imagine it either. And I always watch those shows thinking, I have a hard time leaving my kids for like a couple hours. I just want to, you know, smooch them a little bit. And for me to go somewhere for, you know, 3-4 weeks and not see my kids, that would be way too difficult. Like, I'm always baffled by these bachelor contestants who are single parents. I mean, right. I understand that you find love. However, when you sign that contract, you make an agreement. I will be gone anywhere from, I think it's like 3 days to 6 weeks or something. You don't even know when you're going to come back. So first of all, just to make arrangements for someone to watch your children all that time is insane. But I would just miss my kids too much.
Right. Yeah, I can't imagine. You know, I think that I would love to do a reality show at some point, but I would like to do it now while I don't have all these responsibilities. I couldn't imagine doing it as a parent. It seems a little, I always thought it was a little selfish of the parents to do it with their kids. Like, that time in their life has passed, you know what I mean? To be able to dedicate yourself to living somewhere and being, you know, off the grid for so long. You know, it's one thing to do a docu-follow, but it's another, like you said, to give up, you know, for an unlimited time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. Frankie Grande has appeared on some of these lists. I don't know how you feel about him, but really someone I would rather avoid.
Like, way below level that we are need. I think it's, you know, if you're the sister of somebody, you shouldn't be on a list.
I agree. Let that be a rule, please. Someone tell Julie and the rest of CBS, because I'm very nervous that it's going to be a Frankie Grande, Lance Bass situation.
We need to have limits. I don't know. That's actually a good question. Would Lance Bass do it? I don't know. It's possible, but okay. If Carney Wilson is on, this would be her strategy. I could see her just cooking for everybody and getting along with everybody. She wouldn't really pull out her knives until the end. Lance Bass, he's kind of nice like that too, but I feel like he's been on so many different reality shows. He's too savvy and he might start to like sabotage people and they might pick up on it.
Yeah.
There's like a certain way to play it. Mm-hmm. I think Paul on the last season played a great game because he befriended everybody. And that's truly what you need to win a show like Survivor 2. It's all about your social game. So you become friendly with people. You learn the names of their children and their spouses and where they went to college and what they like to eat and what keeps them up at night. And you sort of ingratiate yourself so that they really feel like they're connected to you. So when it comes to voting, they would feel like they were betraying you, someone that they confided in if they voted you off. So that's really the best thing you can do. But most of those people who join these shows are narcissists. They're totally consumed with themselves.
Exactly.
And they're only a vehicle for to get famous in some way or become an Instagram celebrity. So they're so obsessed with their own self that they don't take the time to get to know anybody else. And that is what does them in the end.
Right. I agree. It looks like there's going to be about 10 spots open. There's a square table for 10 seats. And I hope one of those seats is for Kathy Griffin. I think that this would be really smart for them to put her on. She's so polarizing. People would be curious. And BBUK uses Celebrity Big Brother to kind of restore the image of certain fallen celebrities. So that would, I think, would be interesting. People would probably love to hate her, but I would be interested.
I don't think she's going to do it because I think Kathy's next chapter in life is to become someone who is speaks on behalf of the women's movement.
Yeah.
And she's at an age now where I don't think this is of interest to her anymore. Mm. I think what she really wants to do is speak on behalf of people that are in disenfranchised and living in a house with what's his face? Frankie Grande. Is like way beneath her. If she's going to rehab her, and by the way, my background is in crisis media. So I'm like, I know what I'm talking about here.
Yeah,
she's, that's not the route she's going to take. Big brother. She's going to do something that's part of the women's movement and something that's going to be inspirational and not like a low level. And plus she's probably really pissed at CBS in some way right now. And to go on CBS and sign a contract where she makes a couple marbles and is beholden to them for 6 weeks, I don't think that's of interest. If I were her agent, I would say absolutely not.
But I wonder, I don't even know if she has any representation anymore, but when it comes to CBS, what did they do to her?
I think it's all the major networks. I feel like she feels like they didn't protect her, and like especially when she was pitching her own shows.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she ended up going to Bravo. She got paid, you know, she got paid in waffles. She made nothing.
Right.
But she's pitched so many projects to the major networks and have been, you know, this is way before all of this, by the way, this current
right.
Donald Trump stuff. She pitched so many shows and she was rejected. You know, there's a lot of ageism. So I think that they're not really on her high level list of people that she wants to work with right now.
Yeah.
I think she should pick and choose. She should do something that's really targeted towards, speaking on behalf of the disenfranchised. That's
Well, I throw her out there because she does have a good relationship with Big Brother. She was on there as a guest host and she was did a couple episodes like hosting events and they themed a week around her. I know she's all in with the talk girls. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be a lot of no names. So I don't know. I hope not.
I think it's no names.
Yeah.
No one's going to want to live in that house for weeks.
And they already cut it way down. 13 episodes. It's on almost every night from the 7th of February to the 25th. But they're not even doing a month. And that's the part of the game is the longevity of the game and how it wears you down mentally and all the strategy that you have over time. So it's almost barely worth it.
Well, also, they're going to be competing. That's around the Olympics.
Right.
And they're going to be competing with ABC's The Bachelor All-Star Games, and I think they'll get spanked.
Oh, those winter games. I just saw the promo for that. I was like, really? I can't.
Really cheeseball, too. But I think if you've got, you know, some Z-less celebrities living together in a house every single night of the week, I think it's going to be hard to maintain interest for that show. So you're either going to watch that, the Olympics, or the Bachelor All-Star Games. You're probably going to watch the Olympics and then the All-Star Games and then Celebrity Big Brother.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, as an employee of NBC Universal, I must say I will watch the Olympics first, then Big Brother, and then I don't know what the hell is going on at ABC.
The Olympics. I'm so excited. I go nuts during the Olympics. That's the best.
Yeah. People love it. But yeah, I don't know what's going on over at ABC as per usual. I usually shade them a little bit on the show, just to say the very least. But talking about shade, I've been pretty shady on Twitter about Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. It's becoming the Dorit hour, which isn't the worst thing, but I mean, it's not like she's not like super likable or anything to me. I like 1.5 housewives on Beverly Hills, and that's Kyle and Erica Girardi. Mm-hmm. Proper. I'm a little tired of Erica Jane.
Yeah.
So I know you've talked about this on your show, and you know, this Dorit and PK situation, you know, she called Camille a stupid C. What are we thinking of her at this point?
Of Dorit?
Yeah.
This is what I think. I think that she went through season one. She ended it thinking I look, or surprised that people thought she looked like a terrible mom because she bragged about all of her help, her nannies. And we didn't really see her that much with her kids. So I think she went into strategy mode, as they all do in the second season. I'm going to rebrand myself. So I'm going to make a point this season to always talk about my children.
Yes.
Over the top in every scene.
Yes.
Okay. Another thing I think happened is that after season one, you know, she went from obscurity, basically. I mean, sure, she's married to this guy who manages Boy George, but I mean, on a national scale, not many people knew who she was. I know she had like this swimwear line, you know, 5 years ago, but again, not many people knew who she was. She came out of left field. People were like, who the hell is Dorit? So after season, well, you know, during the season one, this person from obscurity, all of a sudden is getting all these Instagram followers. People are asking to do collaborations of some sort. And I think it got to her head. And I think that she became in her own mind like a superstar. And I think you can see that in the way that her Instagram has become. It's basically her posing in different outfits and with different hairstyles right. All the time. I don't know if I would look at that. Or I would probably guess that her Instagram before she went on Real Housewives did not look anything like what it is now. So I think there's like she lost some authenticity. I do think her ego is like superseding any logic. So we going into second season and she's like, I am a superstar. Because even in the first episode, I felt like in her conversations with the other women, it was like this cocky attitude. Like, I've been on the show for, you know, 14 years and I own this place. So that's a little bit weird. But it is interesting how the season one, it was like, oh, my nannies. Now she's put the nannies away. She doesn't want anybody to know that she has a nanny now. Where did they go? Now she wants everyone to know that she has a makeup team. So I almost feel like she's now transitioned to where she's like trying to be the knockoff Euro version of Erica Jane.
Which we really don't need. And I like Erica, but to a point, I mean, she's enough. She's flamboyant enough. Yeah, no, I can't with it. And the different hair. She loves when people are talking about her new looks and the outrageous outfits. I'm okay with it to a point, but
what? Like also with her, I wonder if she's going to every time she's filming, she's overthinking. Well, I would like to book a couple different shows in this country. So maybe if I have a look that is like that they enjoy, maybe I'll get some. I think if you're going into any scene where you're thinking about how does this relate to my branding? How does this correlate with the message that I'm trying to, like my political message? If you're overthinking that stuff, it's time for you to move on from the show. Because I always say the reason that that show was so interesting in the beginning, especially like the first season of a franchise, is you're truly getting people that are their most authentic selves. And it's all about the interpersonal communication. So all of the stuff that's outside of it, like how big their homes are, that's an ancillary part of what makes that show interesting. It's how the women relate to one another as people that makes it interesting. So if you're overthinking it and you're thinking about branding and promoting your products and, you know, editing yourself so you can make people believe that you're different than the person they saw first season, you're not being an authentic version of yourself and therefore people lose interest in you.
So well said. That leads me right into my rant of the day.
Rant of the day.
My rant of the day is on this same note when it comes to Lisa Vanderpump. This woman has held this show hostage. I don't know how you feel about Lisa, but she's now the highest paid housewife. We don't know the exact number, but NeNe was paid originally the most paid with $1.5 million a season. So I can only imagine how much. But the way she holds these seasons hostage with all of her charity work and showing her businesses. Talk about strategy to be able to, you know, be a business person and branding. She swallowed the show whole. Everyone knows I can't handle it, but I'm really pissed. I can't even stand her on the show anymore. It's to the point where I have to fast forward the scenes. This has been my rant of the day.
That That's my opinion!
I have to say, it doesn't upset me as much as the Orange County one does. But I do feel like, for me, it's always, and I did an interview with Evolution Media's Doug Ross and Alex Baskin. They created Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and pretty much were at the, you know, the beginning of Real Housewives of Orange County, and they do Vanderpump Rules. And, you know, one thing we talked about is when a housewife expires.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they always have to look at, has this person's story already been told? And I think that Lisa Vanderpump has probably gotten to that point. I think that she was a great asset because she brought us, you know, Vanderpump Rules, but I don't necessarily think she's even important to that story in either.
Like, I agree.
Maybe called Vanderpump, but it's more about the relationship with the people that work there or don't work there anymore. But as far as Real Housewives of Beverly Hills goes, I don't know. I don't think she's really necessary to the show anymore because at this point, I feel like I know who she is. I can't imagine I'm going to learn much more about her in another season or two.
Right. And that's why I get so pissed when I see the amount of money they give her, because I agree. She's done. We've seen it. We've seen the lifestyle. We've heard the jokes and the humor and Ken, and we've seen the businesses. And it pisses me off because that's money that could be used for two other far more interesting, fresh faces.
Yeah. I do think in the minds of the producers, one of the things that's hard for them is that when they choose somebody, they're looking at it as a long-term investment. And so when they choose somebody like they did in Peggy in Orange County, you know, that's, I'm sure they feel a sense of loss. Like we were invested in this person and it didn't turn out well. And now we're all the way back to square one. So I think that when you have the sort of, I think it's a well-oiled machine, but, I think sometimes they hang on to people a little bit longer than they should. And I think Lisa Vanderpump is one of them. And I think Vicki Gumbelson is another one.
I agree. I love Vicki for who she is as a housewife. I can see all sides of why people dislike her, why they want her off the show, why they love her. Like, I can see all sides to her. I don't personally want to see her go, but I can understand that it would make sense and I would be okay with it.
Yeah, what I don't need to know anything more about. I know who she is as a person.
Right.
I don't need, there's nothing more I need to know. I don't care about, you know, I don't care about her boyfriend. I'm not interested in Coto insurance anymore. It doesn't matter to me that you started with the show. Things change. Companies change. You know, you could start a company, but at some point, you know, if your company's been in business for 30 years, you're probably going to be replaced as a CEO to get some new fresh talent to freshen up the company. It's the same way
Good
with
point.
The show.
Good point.
You know, just because you started with a show does not mean you need to be there. And also, I think she's like 56 years old. And I think that Vicky? Their sweet spot, yeah, I think that they figured out that the sweet spot is probably women in their 40s, maybe in their late 40s is probably ideal. I don't think at the 10 year mark, that ever happens. Like they have revealed every layer because after season 6 and 7, now they become paranoid. Like, am I going to get fired? I've got to come up with something that keeps me on the show.
Classic Vicky. Yep. And I agree. And when they start calling the show that they're on their show, that's the end for me because it's an ensemble show. You just can't.
I agree. But you know, that's a life lesson that some of them don't get because I think that in some ways, they've never perhaps had some sort of professional position. And that is a life lesson people who work in professional places get. Like, we've all learned that we're expendable, most of us early in our careers. So there's a sense of humility that we all have. Like, I can be replaced. Anybody who works in corporate America knows that every minute of their day. I need to work extra hard because I will be replaced. But for some reason, when it comes to the entertainment industry, specifically these housewives, let's say their husband was like a doctor, right? Mm-hmm. And they've always had money and they've had, you know, not many horrible life experiences. They don't consider themselves expendable at any point. And that's when I think they have a real crisis.
Right.
When, you know, people are like, well, you might be replaced. And that's when they're like, well, let me come up with some cockamamie storyline about myself to keep me on. I will say that when I did interview them, the Evolution guys, they said they really like Shannon Bedore. And I can understand why, because I remember, I think it was it was Doug. He said, when Shannon is on screen, you can't take your eyes off of her. And what he means by that is, like, she reveals things about herself that most of the women on these shows have a really hard time doing. Like, she will stand in a sports bra with her body, you know, when she gains weight, when she's in the middle of a crisis in her marriage and her husband admits he doesn't want to have sex with her anymore. These are things that happen in middle America, you know, the entire country all the time, that women within their own friend groups will share with one another. And Shannon Bedore is willing to do that on national television. Most of these women are very careful about what they say and do on these shows. And that's when they become expendable. I know Lydia personally, or I should say, like, I've seen, you know, we live in the same town. We have, you know, an overlap of friends. I've seen her at parties, and she's a very nice person. However, in terms of a television person, like that I'm watching for entertainment, I can't say that I know anything about Lydia. I don't know what keeps her up at night. I don't know what.
It's so funny that you say that. I say that too with these housewives.
I don't know anything about her.
Yeah.
I have been led to believe that she rides a unicorn around her backyard every day, and that she shits rainbows, and that she's got stacks of money in her closet. I don't know anything about her. But Shannon Bedore, I know a lot about her. I know a lot about Tamra Barney.
Right.
I don't really know that much about Megan Edmonds. Like, that's what I think, if I were a producer, I would start the season asking myself the same of every single cast member. Who is this person? What do I know about them?
A lot of people say this, like, just casual viewers, people who aren't even at all connected to entertainment. I don't know why that doesn't translate to all the minds and all of the different inputs that go into hiring and casting and letting go of housewives. I don't know why we have these hangers on. I mean, it's so obvious that some people just need to go and clear the dead wood. I just don't know why other people like you and I can see it, and people who are completely unconnected can see it. But yet we have, you know, Lydia's considered a big catch and a big get for the show. It frustrates the hell out of me as a viewer.
If I'm right, which I think I am, the two women that I think they're bringing on to Orange County, I think will be an interesting new layer to the show.
Well, that's encouraging. We need that.
I think that it might. I think, you know, I live here in Orange County. So I, you know, a lot of these women don't necessarily reflect the women that I know. I'm in the age group where I've got young kids, and I see girls, you know, dropping off at school in like yoga pants. And I don't know many women that have enormous lips. Mm-hmm. I just don't. Right. I know women that have lines on their faces because they've just given birth to a child, which I always say a child rips the beauty from your face. Mm-hmm. But I don't really see that. And I live in Newport, but I live in an area where it's like, you know, it's just sort of like a laid back surfer kind of area. But there are parts of this town, like Newport Coast, where you have people that have, or they want you to know they have enormous amounts of money. And so it's just a totally different culture. It's very interesting. So I think those women that they're hiring reflect those kind of women who go out to lunch all the time. And every time they take a picture together, they want you to see what kind of bag they brought. Mm-hmm. It's not the people that I know personally or hang out with.
Right.
That might be interesting to watch on television because it's so outside of my norm that I'm going to hate watch it probably. Like, who are these people? Where do they come from? Why do they make these decisions? Because I'm the kind of person that watches that and I'm like, what does that really say about that person? Why do they feel like they need to take pictures of their bags? Are they paranoid because they want to be part of the trend? Like, in New York, you want to be ahead of the trend. But in California, you want to be, there's this paranoia with like staying part of the trend. If I don't have that bag that everybody else has, what does that say about me? That I lack, I'm lacking in some aspect of my life, that I don't have a boat, or that I don't live in that neighborhood, or I don't drive that kind of car.
Let me ask you, do you talk about hate watching? Do you hate watch Vanderpump Rules, or are you into it?
This morning I was at a cheerleading tournament for my daughter. And I got stopped a couple times about people who wanted to talk to me about reality shows. I feel like people are like, everyone wants to vent.
Yep.
they see me as somebody like, I got to talk this out. So I got into a conversation with one person about Vanderpump Rules, and they said, I just get so frustrated with them because they're adults who never seem to want to grow up. And I said, my frustration with that show is I'm concerned for their health. I don't think it's normal to be a 30-year-old doing shots with gummy bears. Or like the last episode or two episodes, Brittany put this beer bottle on the ground and swirled it around like different alcoholic shots and stuff. And it's, I just don't understand how one in their 30s can consume that amount of alcohol and still, you know, carry themselves through life in some way. I would be in the hospital with alcohol poisoning. So then I start to peel the layer back. I'm like, are they on Adderall? Like, is there cocaine being used? Like, what is going on? Because it's just not normal behavior.
Right. I thought the same thing. Like, my friends I talk about all the time, like, Jax, he's like pushing 40. Like, when do you, like, figure something out? Like, when are you sick of that?
Like, that's... Yeah, I was surprised. I just read he's 38 years old, and I was really shocked by that.
Yeah, but, like, he's still doing the same thing he was probably doing at 18. You know, I mean, when does that expire? It just drives me nuts.
Is that, you know, they're being paid to just hang out.
Yeah. You know, my problem with the Vanderpump Rules in general is, and I enjoyed this season, and I'm not like being too critical on them as I have in the past, because honestly, Vanderpump Rules was never really my show. It was a casual watch. I knew of the people. I knew a lot of my friends watched it, so I tried to get into it for them. However, I'm really into this season, but this group, to me, they live to be on this show, and I don't believe that they have much of a life outside of these relationships and keeping things fresh for this show, especially Sheena. I feel like she lives her life around the production.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I've hit a wall.
Really? Is it just too much? I mean, it's a sixth season, right? I mean, is it just, are you just done?
I don't know how long you can prolong a story about a couple where the man treats the woman like a doormat.
Mm-hmm.
They're both drinking copious amounts of alcohol. They're sharing living space, but he just continues to treat her like a doormat. Like, as a woman, I don't know how much I can withstand that. I don't know how much I can withstand someone like Sheena, who's so self-consumed, because I in my own life will not put up with someone who is that self-consumed. I don't know how long I can put up with, you know, I love Tom Schwartz. I've interviewed him and I love him. I think he's really earnest. He's kind. He's incredibly cute. He's very sweet, but you know, it's like the wheels are going, but I don't know where they're going. You know, like, he's moving on the bike, but I don't know where he's going. And I'm the kind of person that, like, surround myself with people who are like, they've got a mission in life and they're working hard towards it.
Of course.
So I feel like watching the show sometimes, it's like watching people in a perpetual state of young adulthood.
Yep. And that's only, that's the future. I hate to say it, but that's how I feel.
Moving on. And but then I'm like, maybe in their minds, well, we're going to, you know, elongate this experience as much as we can. So maybe we'll have a spinoff show about getting married or blah, blah, blah. And I think you always have to be mindful if you're on these shows that, like, this is a short window of life. But I don't know. I think that once they get all this attention and they get the free things, that they lose all sense of reality and don't come up with some sort of long-term plan.
I think that's exactly what happened. I totally agree. Yep. Well, when we return, we're going to be talking more with Kate. We're going to be talking about some news coming out of Real Housewives of New Jersey. I want to take a look at this A&E show, Undercover High, and get Kate's thoughts on it really quick. And then I want to catch up with her, talk a little bit about what's going on in her life and all of her various jobs. So that and more with Kate in a moment.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Subscribe and spread the word.
There are a lot more rants to come.
Listen anytime on all major podcasting platforms.
And now, back to the show.
And we're back talking with Kate from Reality Life with Kate Casey. And we're going to be looking at Real Housewives of New Jersey. There's some news coming out of there. Margaret, it looks like her house is in foreclosure. I was really hoping it wasn't true, but if you search her name, unfortunately, that's all that comes up right now. So I kind of feel bad in a way because she delivered as a housewife, and I think that I really enjoy her. So I hate to see some negative press at the tail end of a good season.
Well, here's the thing, is that I think it's fair game if somebody is on television is bragging about, well, you know, we own 4 homes and we are multimillionaires and we do this and we're so blessed, you know, hashtag blessed. Mm-hmm. But when someone is like that, I do think that when news of like a foreclosure comes out, there is reason people are like, okay, well, that was a bunch of bullshit and here's the reason why. I never felt like Margaret was like that. I think, like, I remember interviewing, I found her to be really, really pretty down to earth. And I never found her to be braggadocious. And she just seemed like a person who really worked hard at her company. So when I hear news about that, it's like I turn the page. I almost feel like I'm violating her. I'm crossing a line that I shouldn't. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if I really want to know about her finances. The only time I'm like, okay, what's the real deal with finances? Like I said, is when somebody is projecting themselves to be something that they're not.
Like NeNe. I was all over NeNe when it was shit. After all the bragging, I enjoyed those stories because she needs to be taken down several notches.
Yeah, she brags a lot about, well, you know, I am rich. I am rich, 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 rich. So I get it when it's like those stories come out. But I just feel like Margaret, and I guess I also feel a little bit bad because I feel like she had her hard season with Siggy. I just feel like there was so much stuff off camera that went on that I can't imagine. I have to say, I wouldn't be surprised if she didn't come back next season.
Margaret. Mm-hmm.
Because it's like,
I hope so.
I mean, if you've been off the show, like she still has one more week left of reunion. When people start bringing up your foreclosure, why would you want to go back? Why would you subject yourself to a television show? It's not, what fun did she actually have?
The only thing I can say is it's after, and this is what they say, after the show wraps, it's all the press and the traveling. She was at CES. I guess that's how they justify it. They make up for all their appearances and the love they get on Twitter. And I guess somehow it equals out being worth it. But personal attacks and business attacks.
You really make money until the third season you're on a show. So she's mm-hmm. been only on one season. She still had relatively a low number of Instagram followers compared to other people's. I don't know. She might ask if it's worth it. But you know what? Some of these Instagram followings for housewives, I don't know if I believe them. Like if we were to use some sort of app and like get a percentage of how many are bots.
I don't believe much these days. It's getting worse and worse. I'm having a hard time getting even through certain reality shows because I'm just like, I can see through everything. Even stuff with like What Happens Live, I can just see right through the production. It drives me nuts.
I promise you there is a multitude of really incredible television that's outside of those, you know, handful of shows.
And I think that's why I took so strongly to Leah Remini's Scientology show, because that was so based in reality. It was so well produced. It was so full of information, yet entertaining. And I was so captivated by the entire series. I banked up episodes, and I just found it so interesting. But I realized not only was the subject matter interesting, but just that it was something different and fresh and real. That's probably why I gravitated towards it so much.
Well, I have a theory too about, you know, I have been writing about this show called 90 Day Fiancé for a couple years. Mm-hmm. And this year I've, you know, been talking a lot about it, and I've seen a real upswing in there and how many people have been watching the show. And I think for this year particularly, that's because housewives, for example, are so, you know, it's like they all are so manicured and their lives are so over the top. So it's almost a breath of fresh air for people to watch a show, which is people that are not doing the show for fame, who live in normal places, who have normal bank accounts, who are really open about the dysfunction in their life. And I think that's a breath of fresh air. I think people are sort of getting some, what's the word I'm looking for? Fatigue. They're getting fatigued.
Oh, totally.
the perfection that is on some of the shows that are about people with wealth.
That's, I've been saying that since the end of last year. It really is. It's Housewives fatigue for me. It's fatigue of these edited ensemble shows. You know the formula. At the last quarter of the season, they go on a trip. Then we go into the reunion. You know, the reunion formula is we show the funny moments. Then we introduce the new housewife. And it's so formulaic at this point. For me, I enjoy really a lot of other things for that exact reason.
Yeah.
So I got to go back to Housewives real quick and talk about Caroline, just because I was kind of interested. I thought for sure she would want nothing to do with the show, but Us Weekly is reporting that producers are considering approaching them. But somebody spoke to Caroline and she said it's not a no and it's certainly not a yes. It's a who knows. And she talked about how she'd have to consider it for a long time. I was very glad when they got rid of her from the show because I, like we said earlier, I thought we told her story and I was a little sick of her bossing everyone around and I felt like enough and Manzo with Children was more than enough. So I don't know though. I mean, like I said on the recap, I've been doing recaps for New Jersey and I said, you know, if they bring her back, that is really a last-ditch effort for them to try to bring the show back to its glory years because they've tried everything with this show. I don't know.
I think that show, I think that they need to scrap it and get a whole new cast. I know that's an enormous commitment on their part, but I just think all of their storylines are so boring. Their lives, I'm not interested in any of these people anymore. There are plenty of women in New Jersey. There are plenty. My sister lives in New Jersey. Like, I go to her hometown and I'm like, it's like a box of popcorn. Like, I cannot even believe how interesting these people are. And I'd like to see some women who have really interesting professional careers. You know,
that's something they haven't done. Yeah, they haven't really done anything like that. Children.
I mean, my sister's town, for example, I mean, there are plenty of women who like work in hedge funds or they're attorneys and they also happen to have 3 or 4 children. They have interesting husbands and they have lived in different parts of the world before settling into Northern Jersey so they can make a commute into the city. Those people would be really interesting. And I think the whole goal of the Housewives is that it's not just the interpersonal relationships between a group of women, but to really crack open a segment of the population that people don't really necessarily see. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be great in this Me Too movement, you know, climate to see a woman who's incredibly successful in a professional life and also in her personal life and to see the relationship she has with, you know, maybe with a sibling and they share a group of friends. And, you know, they're people who work really hard and have these really interesting family lives in a small town. I would love to see that. And I would hope, I know that for the production people, it's like, oh, what a headache to start from scratch. But
well, you know what? My solution to that is this show, before you put it to sleep, get a different production company to produce this show. Cause I think that's been a big problem. The relationships that these women have with the producers on the show, they've really have not been successful in taking it in a new direction. I think before you call it done, put it in the hands of another production company and see what they can do with it. And then at that point, I mean, you know, certain shows run their course.
Yes, I agree.
So I don't know. That's my opinion. And let's talk about this show, Undercover High. I meant to watch it. I heard your interview with Dr. Weichmann, I believe, on the show. And then I went right into watching it. And
Oh, good.
While it was a little depressing, but it's also very real, you know, very much anti-Housewives. So anyone looking for something really gritty, true to life, you know, we're talking, what state is this in?
Kansas.
Yeah, something completely different from the Housewives universe. But I enjoyed it. I liked that they had the little story arcs with the kids getting acclimated in the friend groups, and we saw the different racial divides within the minorities. Like, it was interesting, but it's also kind of sad to see the next generation of who's coming up.
I know. I think it's a real jolt to people because, like the Housewives and some of these other shows, it's like fantasy living. Mm-hmm. And this is a really great show because it really strips down the experience of a high school kid today. And not only that, not only are you getting a window into what's going on in high school, but it's really captivating to hear the experiences of these adults that are planted into the high school. You know, it's interesting to follow this one woman. She's, I think, like 25, and she is pursuing a PhD in education. She wants to be a superintendent, mm-hmm. and she looks unusually young for her age, but she said that when she was in high school, she was a bully. So now she's going into schools with the intent of the one day being a superintendent, and she's being confronted by bullies. So that's an interesting, layer of the show too, is that some of these adults are reliving their own personal, you know, their own high school experience and discussing what they went through in high school and how things look different with a new set of glasses. Mm-hmm. By the way, it's a great interview too I did with Dr. Jerry Weichman, who's a dear friend of mine, because he kind of goes the extra steps and explains, because he's an adolescent therapist, what's going on in American high school, but gives advice to parents on what you can do to open the lines of communication. And at the end of it, he talked about a drug that the kids are using today that parents are oblivious to because it looks like,
oh my God,
like a drive for your computer.
You know, after the interview, I looked it up. It's like a vaporizer, and it's a USB stick that you can charge in your computer, and no one would ever know. It's called the Juul.
Yes.
It's just frightening stuff. And I mean, I couldn't imagine, like, I would never want to go back, but, the show is really, it wasn't a huge shock to me in a way, cause my sister taught in public school and she left because it was rough. It was not about behavior as much. It was, so that was a big part of it, but also the way it's structured, it's so government mandated, and you got to move at a certain pace as a teacher. Like, you really can't even stop long enough to even care if someone's falling behind. You know, you have to really be a special person and go the extra mile for very little money.
I want you to do this for me. If when you have time, which I know you don't have a lot of time, but there was a show that you would love so much, and you can find it on, I believe you can find it on YouTube, and it was called American High. It aired in 2001 and it aired on Fox, and it was a drama series, like a reality show, that followed the lives of a group of suburban Chicago high school students. You're going to watch it, and then you're going to Google to find these kids and to see if you could get an update on them, because that's my problem too, is like, I watch a show and I'm so invested in them and I want the best for people that I'm like, okay, well, what happened afterward? And I think that would be a great show for me to revisit and to go back and find kids that were on it and ask them, like, how did this impact you in life, having your life filmed?
Where are they now? Yeah. But if you want to check out Undercover High, you can find that over on A&E, and I recommend it. It was a interesting watch. I didn't know if I was going to like it, but I think I'm going to keep up with it, so... Well, I want to talk with you now. I want to turn the tables and talk about Reality Life. And I want you to kind of describe the show for those who aren't aware. Describe the show and kind of the origin of it and where it's gone.
Okay, so Reality Life with Kate Casey is my brainchild. I came up with the show because I have always, I've always been fascinated by reality television. I remember watching the first season of Real World while I was home on a summer vacation from high school, and watching an entire marathon of New York episodes while I like cleaned my mom's house. So I'm just the kind of person that when I was a kid, I would endlessly look at my mom's high school yearbook and ask her about the people in the yearbook. What was their name? Where did they live? What were their siblings' names? When you went back to the reunion, what were they like? Were they married, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm just somebody who always loved shows like that, but I've also been interested in like what happened to those people. So the idea of the show was to have three segments. The first segment would be to interview somebody who was on a reality show many years ago and sort of like follow up with them, or to interview someone that's presently on a reality show to ask them about how they were cast and how they're dealing with like the impact of sudden fame or having their lives, you know, looked at through a microscope. And then the other two segments, I choose different reality shows on television, and I ask both famous and non-famous guests to watch the episode and then for us to talk about it. So your full experience of an episode is to talk to somebody who is on a reality show and to hear from somebody who's viewing a reality show. So it's like a full circle reality television like experience. And lastly, I would explain it as a celebration of reality television.
Mm-hmm. I would definitely describe it as an experience. The idea that you have three different segments that are unique with different perspectives really make it feel like a complete show, like a you know, almost as if you're listening to a full Sirius XM show. There's a lot in it. I'm sure it takes a lot of time to produce and to coordinate. I mean, it's hard enough to get one person to do this show, so it must be a lot to coordinate such a show.
It's a tremendous amount of work, and it's a good thing that I love it so much, because otherwise I'd slam my head against a wall. Yep. Although I still do that sometimes.
I can relate.
The trickiest part for me is to hunt down people on reality shows. I never have a problem finding people to review a show, because it's so many people watch shows, and
right.
and it's just a good laugh. But the problem for me is booking them, because the number one problem is podcasts are a new medium and not everybody understands it. So I have to explain the value of it, which is quite frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think that sometimes people haven't really wrapped their brain around the experience yet. I don't know if they really have enough perspective to talk about it without being extremely thoughtful about their answers. Sometimes my best interviews are people that I haven't been on show for a while. Like one of my favorite interviews was with Mike, the Situation from Jersey Shore. And a lot of people are like, that guy's an asshole. He actually was quite nice. And what I liked about him was he was really honest about the experience that he had. You know, I was really high when I was filming that. I was, you know, drinking. I was high. I had no sense of myself. I treated people poorly. It was really hard for me to deal with being famous so quickly. I didn't know how to manage my finances. Like, he was really honest about it. Or talking to Rachel Campos Duffy, who was on the third season of Real World in San Francisco. She was on the season with Pedro Zamora, who was the first person on television to be open about having HIV, and how that really shifted the American perspective on HIV and her experience being on that show and being a part of Pedro's life, and how how that sort of changed her life. So I like stuff like that, which is more like an anthropological look on the experience of reality TV. But I also really enjoy talking to people who are on shows now. Like, I have an upcoming episode next week where I chatted with a girl from Siesta Key.
Mm-hmm.
She's, 22 years old, but it's the second season of the show. And in the first season, she was made fun of by two male cast members about her weight. And as a person who, like, as a woman watching it, it was enormously frustrating, because she's at an age where you're so impressionable, and she's, that's magnified being a figure on national television. And I was really proud of her, and inspired by how she stood up for herself on TV and said, it's absolutely outrageous for you to comment on my weight, and how in the months since filming ended, how so many people, both men and women, have come to her and said, you should never let somebody body shame you. And this is no reflection of who you are. It's more of the person that says those things. And to have that life experience and to have that perspective at 22, I thought was really fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I would hope that young girls listen to it and the message that she has, because, all of us as young women are worried about how we look and our weight. And this is a girl on national TV on a show where women are in bikinis with this like filter to look perfect. And these two guys who are just losers are saying, like, you should stop eating. You should not eat today. And it's just outrageous. So anyway, that's great too. I just really like talking to people. I mean, it's really no different than my normal day where I, can sit at a taco place and end up in a 45-minute conversation with the person next to me about, what's going on in their life. So
right.
I find it all really interesting. And I have such a great laugh connecting with people all over the country who write to me and say, I would love to be a guest because I just came upon the show, and my perspective is interesting because I am in the health, mental health field, or I may be an orthopedic surgeon. However, I can't stop watching Vanderpump Rules, and I'd love to. So it's been great. It's been great. It's a lot of work, but it's the most fun that I've ever had in my life. My life before this was media consulting for law firms, and I was like a crisis media expert for people.
And, very different.
Very different and very serious.
Very.
And this is just, you know, a good fun. And the great thing is that I have four small children, and I get to do it while I'm at home and still be super involved with the kids, but also feel like I've got a hand in the entertainment industry, which is not an easy thing to do at all, let alone when you are married with children. So it's been really fun, and the inspiration is endless. So it's been great.
That's wonderful. As someone who produces podcasts professionally for a living, I'm familiar with all the different ways of reaching out to guests and talent. How do you get people to be courted onto your show?
Well, I pride myself in somebody who understands media. So, you know, I have a professional pitch, obviously, that I use when I go to somebody. And I really have worked hard to cultivate relationships with people who work in media and different networks. My goal is always for someone to listen and to walk away thinking, I didn't really know that about that person, or that really changed my perspective of how I looked at that scene, or, you know, I really want to learn more about this person. Like, I had a housewife from Dallas open up to me about, you know, being a victim of domestic abuse. And she'd never discussed that on the show, but she talked about it with me, and it was really interesting. And I was really delighted to hear how many people reached out to her and said how much they appreciated her honesty. So it's sort of like you watch somebody on a show, and one of those shows is like an ensemble where you have seven people, you're getting a glimpse into their life. So my hope is always to give them an opportunity to talk a little bit more about themselves.
I will say, after listening to your show, I always find at least one thing that I Google while listening or immediately after that I'm interested in that I didn't think of looking at, or someone I wanted to look up, or a topic I want to know more about. So it definitely is not necessarily thought-provoking, but like motivational to kind of keep a theme or a conversation going. So, it's working.
I really appreciate that. That's really makes me really happy.
Of course. Well, how do you stay motivated with having four kids? I know you write, you have your own website, loveandknuckles.com, and you do this podcast. How the hell do you do it?
Well, I think that you'll find that the people who get a lot done are the people that have a lot of kids, because you just don't really have a chance to sit down. And a couple of things. One is that I'm not a big sleeper. I never have. Like, my husband's somebody who needs like a good 7-8 hours of sleep.
And that's me.
I've never been somebody that really needs it, which is why I'm always really good with newborns, because I'm okay.
I'm
really intrigued by what I do and fascinated. So that keeps me interested. I mean, I've had a job before where it's like, I woke up every morning for work and thought, I don't know how I'm going to go in because I hate everyone there and I hate what I'm doing. And this is the complete opposite, where I'm constantly interested in things, digging deep into things. So that keeps me going. And I also want my kids to see that I can do some, like, I can have a second chapter in my professional career. I think it's important for kids to see that you are a happy and fulfilled person. And that may not just be a job, but it might just be a hobby, or, you know, just something that makes you feel fulfilled and that they see that you have a passion for something. So my husband and I are well suited for each other, because we're both people who are very hard workers and really thoroughly enjoy what we do for a living. So I think that if our kids see that, that they'll feel confident when they start working and they find something they really enjoy, that it would be enormously satisfying to put everything they have into that.
Makes sense. Absolutely. I'm setting a good example.
I hope so.
Yeah, I know it's a lot of time and effort and patience to get anything done, especially with the writing. I mean, I know you write recaps. As someone, I've done that in the past. I mean, that's its own line of work. I mean, with just turnaround, and it's a lot. So I give you a lot of credit.
Sometimes the one thing that can be frustrating with that is that I'm somebody that likes to acknowledge other people's work, and most people are pretty private. And so I think that the hard thing with the recaps is that, you know, you work for an hour and a half to write something that's really fun. For me, my recaps are really almost like fan fiction, like dramatic reenactments. I'll put in language or conversations that didn't really happen. Mm-hmm. So it's like an exaggerated version. It's not like it's a recap, like this happened and this happened. It's something to entertain you, almost like a dessert after right. you watch the show.
Same.
So what can seem frustrating is like you write this beautiful piece or you think it is, and you have a good time. You have such a laugh writing it, and then you put it out and then not many people respond to it. You can't help but feel discouraged. So in those moments when I feel discouraged, and I think this is for a lesson for everyone in life. It doesn't matter if you're writing recaps or, you know, you're walking into an office building as an, you know, administrator, or, you know, you're an architect, whatever you do, that I feel like, with, for lack of a better term, the universe bitch slaps you, because you can so down on yourself, and then in those the moments where you feel most down, someone will come out of nowhere, a corner of nowhere, and say, I really appreciate what you do, I had a great laugh, I was really inspired, or whatever the comment is. It gives you enough wind in your sails to carry on, and if you connect all those experiences, you will see that you're doing the right thing.
I've had the same experience with this show, and it's gotten me through periods of unemployment and bad jobs, and I have moments where it's just so much work, but then I connect those dots and I say, wow, like, it really is, it's entertaining people, and that's what I really feel like I'm here to do anyway, but it really makes it all worth it. It makes me continue, even as simple as a quick DM, it really does add to the value, so much so that it's just, I'm so thankful to even have the show. You know, I don't really necessarily worry about numbers as much as I used to, because I'm just grateful just to have the show.
Yeah, I mean, even like today, like at the cheerleading tournament, this woman said, oh, I, you know, I listen to your podcast, and it was as if she just gave me a gold medal, because it just feels like, you know, everyone likes to feel like there's a purpose to the work that they do. And the important thing for me is just about connection with people. I think if we all kind of look at those moments and just have gratitude for connection, we would feel much more fulfilled.
That's exactly how I live my life. It's never lost on me when someone makes the effort to not only listen, but to tell me they listened, or and tell me a point that they liked, or that they read something, or they even just retweet something as simple as pressing a button is not lost on me. I'm so thankful.
I guess that's why you and I probably get frustrated with the housewives, because these are people who were, you know, planted from obscurity, and they get immediate fame, and they take for granted the fact that there are people who are at home with a screaming baby, or they just left a job that they hate, and they're watching you, and you're giving them some sort of relief. And when they reach out to you and say, my name is Mary, and I live in Oklahoma, and I'm a nurse, and I really enjoyed this episode, when they're dismissive, or they're, you know, flippant, or they're, you know, they believe themselves to be so much, so high above those, you know, of others, that you feel a little bit betrayed. Like, you know,
totally.
You were not what I thought you were. You're not, you know, you and I are more alike than you realize.
Well, that'll do it. Thank you so much for this chat and talking all about reality TV so deeply. I enjoyed this chat so much. So thank you.
This has been fun. It's been a real treat. And I appreciate how hard you work and how much you enjoy the shows that I do too. And it's been a real fun hour to get to know you better, and I look forward to collaborating. And next time you're coming on my show, and I'm going to make you watch something. Maybe you should watch an episode of American High.
Okay.
And then about that, because I think more people need to tune in and find that show, because that's a great story.
All right, I'll write that down. I'll make that my homework assignment.
That is your homework assignment.
All right.
Episode 1 of American High. It's available on YouTube.
Will do. I'm going to be looking it up. Thank you, Kate, for doing the show. And we can find Kate on her show, Reality Life with Kate Casey, on all major podcasting platforms. Check out her website at loveandknuckles.com. Thanks again for coming on and ranting with us.
Thank you, Grant.
We'll be back with more rants.
This has been Grant's Rants. Support the Rants on Patreon. Follow us on Twitter at It's Grant's Rants. Cover art created by Howie Rone. Voiceover by Aw Yeah. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arntzen. The Grant Michael Collection.